You're listening to Back to Us Radio on the Back to Us Network.
Gosh, you are not going to believe what they are talking about on the Strong Stance. This episode of tonight's Strong Stance is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audible.com/backtous.
All right. Good evening, everyone. This is The Strong Stance. I am your host, Eli Strong. Thanks to all the Back to Us listeners and Strong Stance faithful that have tuned in tonight to hear this amazing topic. Once again, we are always trying to bring you not only entertaining content, but stuff to get the conversational juices flowing. And most of the time, it's not always the most polite things to talk about in public society. And often, they are subjects that need to be discussed, whether or not they actually are or not. And tonight is no exception. And before I really get into the topic, though, I want to re-welcome a co-host that most of you may remember from our January show on outing and the concept of post-transition, and that is Melvin Whitehead. Melvin, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for bringing me back on.
Absolutely. I feel like, you know, you and I had a really great time at that last show, and you and I, you know, we have some of the same ideas, and we're both relatively radical in some of the things that we think about. And so I definitely wanted to kind of bring you back on because I really, really enjoyed that show that we did back in January. And we've been talking a lot about this topic that we're going to do tonight. So for those of our listeners waiting very patiently to know what that is that we are going to talk about relationships, but we're not going to talk about relationships in the way that we often do, whether it's just within the trans community or outside of the trans community. You know, from the moment that we're born as human beings, we have all kinds of expectations that are kind of thrust upon us, and whether they are kind of made known or whether they are, you know, just things that are kind of unspoken but definitely known, the reality is that we have to deal with all of these things. And so the thing that we're going to talk about tonight that is mostly not talked about as often is the concept of interracial relationships and the concept of being trans or cis within a relationship together, crossing lines. And it's very interesting about the expectations around that and kind of is it any better or worse in the LGBTQ community? So, you know, this is something that Melvin and I had started talking about. So, Melvin, if you could, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about, you know, kind of one of the things that brought this to the forefront and why you felt so compelled to kind of bring it to me, because I think it's a wonderful topic, but I want to know what kind of triggered that in you.
Actually, the topic was, you know, rattling around the back of my head. It was a result of a conversation that I was having with some friends recently a couple weeks ago. And it's something that, I've in the course of the relationships I've been in over the past, you know, several years, it's something that's come up because, you know, I'm someone who's, you know, dated people of different races and ethnic backgrounds. And because I'm trans, you know, I've sort of thought about what role being cisgender or transgender plays into attraction. And things like that. So anyway, it was just a result of a conversation I had with some friends, and I thought it would be a great topic for tonight's show, something that some of our other listeners might be interested in talking about and hearing about.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, obviously I think that this is something that we don't talk about enough, right? You know, I mean, I think that in the the non-queer world, there are certain expectations, and especially if you come from certain families, not all families, but there's a difference when you have people that are kind of in a relationship and they're from different backgrounds, particularly if they are of different races, and even more so if one of those people is white. And part of that comes back to privilege, and part of it comes back to what, you know, certain people, or whether it's society or whatever, considers a standard of beauty, and what's easy versus not when it comes to life and the decisions that we make. But we're also going to get into tonight whether there is an expectation of, if you are trans, to be in a relationship with another trans person or a cis person. And the great thing is that, you know, this show has never been one to say, okay, here's a topic and here is the reality of that situation and this is the answer. I think that one of the wonderful things that we do on this show is that we pose questions and we discuss them, but we don't necessarily answer them because they're almost never issues that we can actually answer.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, I think that one of the things that I, you know, back in the day when I worked in nonprofits, one of the things that we said a whole lot was the personal is political, right? We say that the things that are important to us as people are political issues. They are the things that we fight for. And, you know, I'd like to know, you know, some of the things that you and I have talked about is our dating world, political? Or is that a part of a personal that isn't political?
You know, I'm one of those people who doesn't think that there's any separation between the personal and the political, right? Because, you know, we all exist in this, in one kind of societal context or another, and it's hard to divorce our attraction, our quote-unquote preferences from that context, because our preferences are informed by the context in which we live, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I think that the other thing that we have to think about is that word of, you know, when we talk about different things, that whether it's your sexual orientation or whether it's your gender identity or whether it's whatever the case may be, I feel like a lot of people in the LGBTQ community have come to have a bad taste in their mouth about the word preference, and because of the fact that it's so often used by the cisgender and the straight community to say that you have a sexual preference for men or women, or you have a preference for this gender or that gender, when many people are saying, no, it's not like I chose this. This is just kind of the way I am. But is it the same case when it comes to who you date and who you love with regard to gender identity? So if you identify as one gender identity and you fall in love with someone who happens to be the opposite or the same, or if you fall in love with someone or date someone of the same or a different race, does that come down to preference, or is that something that you feel like is more innate or even more so like a societal thing?
You know, I think it is a societal thing, because I think, you know, deep down, like, you know, we the people that we find ourselves attracted to, I mean, in terms of race, right, it's a social construct. I don't think there's anyone who could, you know, successfully say that, you know, hey, I was born being attracted to white people. That was just like how I was born, right? You know, we would say it's ridiculous, but when it comes to something like sexual orientation, I wouldn't call it a preference, right? It's an orientation, like you just said,
right.
And it's something that's not necessarily, you know, driven by your societal context. You know, I think we're, you know, people are still trying to figure out what determines our sexuality and how it's shaped and how it's formed. So I definitely think there's a difference between preference and orientation.
Yeah, and I would have to say that line is even more gray when you come to dating someone that is either trans or cis, regardless of which side of the line that you may happen to lie on. You know, I know people that had never met a trans person in their life, but they fell in love with one and married one, or that they dated, you know, several, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, because there's the whole idea of, well, when it comes to sexual orientation, are you attracted to the anatomy or the person? And most people would argue the person. I've known some people to argue the anatomy. You know, this is what I want, right? And when it comes to trans people, sometimes that fits, you know, a person's body fits with their mind, and sometimes it doesn't. And so, you know, as I know several trans men who have found many of their partners within the lesbian community, if they are attracted to women, and they find that much easier because, oh, well, they were women and they dated women before, and I'm not saying that I'm a woman, but, it's a little easier, and there's the whole body issue there. But then you have others that are like, no, I'm a man, and she is straight. She's attracted to men, and therefore that's why she's attracted to me. And so it's always very gray, because I feel like it's not just about the person who exists as trans, but it also has to do with the person who is dating that person and their own personal identity. And does that affect their identity or not affect their identity?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, when we talk about, you know, preference and transgender people and cisgender people dating them, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I prefer to date other cisgender people if they're cisgender, when in fact, like, you know, if they've never dated a trans person, they're making assumptions about who they are, what their anatomy is like, because I don't think you can say, I prefer dating, you know, cisgender people without making assumptions about transgender people, and that's what I think is problematic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that if you do make that kind of statement, particularly if you haven't ever dated a trans person, or maybe didn't even know one, that what it also could be, I mean, you're really making not only a judgment call on anatomy, you're making assumptions about what it means to be trans, right? And I think that there's also that whole idea of the guilt by association. And so we think about all of this, you know, very often in our society. We talk about this from the concept of what the privileged person feels with regard to dating someone who is not of privilege. So, you know, just this last couple of minutes, we're talking about reasons why someone may or may not say or claim that if they're trans or if they're cisgender, that they would prefer not to date someone who is trans, or they would prefer to date someone who is cis. Very often we also talk about, you know, or at least society very often talks about why or why not a white person would choose to date a person of color. And I think that one of the interesting things about this conversation that we're going to have tonight is that, sure, we're going to talk about those things, but we're going to kind of turn it a little bit on its head and really delve into, let's talk to the person that isn't from the point of privilege and say, why is it or why not that you choose or choose not to date a person of privilege? Whether that means a trans person dating a cis person, whether it means a person who is black dating someone who is white, or, you know, anything else like that. And so that's one of the reasons that I kind of am really excited about these conversations that we're going to have tonight, because, as always, just like our other shows, we're kind of taking something that many people talk about, or at least whisper about, and turning it just a shade on its ear.
Yes, absolutely. I can't wait to delve into this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's a couple things that have occurred recently before we bring on some of our guests, because we do have some amazing guests tonight, that, you know, in pop culture or in recent, you know, happenings that have occurred that you had brought to my attention, now one of which I was very aware of. So for our listeners that are aware of who Michael Sam is, Michael Sam was the first openly gay player to be drafted in the NFL. And when he was informed of his draft, he was very emotional, and like most men who are drafted, he kissed his partner. Now, the thing is that his partner was a man and not a woman, and a lot of people had a big issue about that. Well, what I didn't know, because I hadn't actually heard it, was that, you know, you and I had talked about that there were also some people that were very upset that not that he had just kissed his boyfriend, but that he, as a black man, had kissed his white boyfriend on ESPN. And so I'd love it if you could just kind of elaborate a little bit on that, because that was a part of the argument that I hadn't heard. I had been listening to mostly people going, oh, that's wrong, children shouldn't see men kissing on ESPN, and less so much of the racial context to that conversation.
Well, I think, you know, gay communities, and particularly I'm talking about gay male communities, have long sort of, you know, herald or upheld this physical ideal of a, you know, white, masculine, fit man as being like the epitome of attraction, right, in the gay male community. And I think that a lot of gay men of color in particular sort of obviously can't relate to that image. And of course, we just mentioned earlier that, you know, white people are elevated as being, you know, more attractive than other races. And so It was that sort of brought it to a head, and this, you know, black NFL player, right, the first openly gay NFL player, you know, has his white boyfriend on national television and kisses him, and it's sort of like, oh, another one, you know, and because
yeah.
there are so many, and also, when you know, there's so many black men and who only date white men. Not to say that Michael Sam is such a man, but there are so many black men in the gay male community who only date white men, and it may make other gay men feel rejected or that they're not affirmed in the same way. So I think the anger stemmed from that.
Yeah, I do find that extremely interesting because of the fact that, you know, it's just one of those things where, I don't know, it's like which is worse, you know? I mean, there are so many people that are upset at so many things, and I feel like there are certain people that absolutely have a right to feel like, oh, well, if it's my relationship, then I have this personal issue. And, you know, if you don't particularly want to date one person or the other, I totally get that. If you do want to date one person or the other, I totally get that. I think that what's very interesting is if they're civil, the conversations that can kind of come out of this about why. Why is it that there is this kind of look at when a black man chooses to date a white man or a black woman chooses to date a white woman or vice versa? And I think that that's a real contextual conversation that can happen. And honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, I ain't mad at you, you know, because if we don't talk about it, it's just, oh, let's just pretend that this isn't happening and that this isn't an issue that some people have a problem with. So I want to go ahead and I think that we've kind of set the stage here for a number of great conversations. And so we have a short series of guests tonight. And I'd love to bring on the first guest. And so, Melvin, would you like to introduce Derek?
Sure, yeah, awesome. Yes, Derek Gunter, a friend of mine, provides leadership and administration for the ACE program, advancing Loyola University's strategic initiatives to support and retain low-income students, first-generation college students, and students with disabilities. Derek is known for his high energy, supportive nature, and positive attitude, and I can personally attest to that as a good friend of mine. Please welcome to the show, Derek Gunter.
Hello, hello. Good evening, everybody.
Hello, Derek.
Hey, Derek, how
are
you doing?
Sorry, Eli said, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you all for that wonderful introduction.
And thank you so much for being on the show. This is really awesome. And so, Derek, can you just tell our listeners how you identify in terms of your race and gender and sexuality?
Yeah. So I guess Black, African American, and then in gender, I would say queer. You know, some folks might see it as more of the cis queer gender kind of identity group. You know, and I guess, and so for me, I talk about the queer space for me because, while I think I often show up as more cisgender, I think it's just expression, right? And, you know, how we were, like, we'll kind of talk through this on a lot of pieces about where all that's rooted in and how that's historically around, you know, lots of different spaces. So, yeah.
Okay. And so in terms of your sexual orientation?
Oh, okay.
You're
gay. That's right. I forgot about that. Right.
Your gender expression had this long escalation, and then your sexual change. Oh, gay. So I have a few questions for you. Derek. So to what extent have you been in interracial relationships or relationships with transgender people?
Yeah. So for me, I've actually dated one trans-identified male person. And then in terms of interracial relationships, she was actually white. And then in terms of just overall, like, I feel like I just have dated, you know, male-identified people in the last couple of years. I think in my earlier days when I talk about, like, my life and say that maybe I wasn't coming to grips and learning about all the pieces of my sexual orientation, I started off dating primarily women-identified folks. But now as, like, a, you know, identified gay male, I say, well, I'm just had probably historically dated for a while now, male-identified people. And I dated all different races, right? Because I think it's just something that I've just been attracted to. I talk about, like, so for me, it's always been a piece of, like, you know, and everybody says, oh, it's the person. So I like how you all were talking about the preference and all that stuff. But I feel like for me, it has been about the person and the energy because I have dated, you know, people of all different backgrounds. So, yeah.
Have you dated any white people before? Any white guys?
yep, I have dated, you know, everyone basically the white guys. Like, my life, I'm currently in a relationship with a guy who's white. My prior two boyfriends were white. But in me, like, prior to that, like, I did a guy who's black, a guy who's Latino, and then a guy who's mixed race. He was Latino and black. Latino, Italian, and black. So.
Okay. So I'm wondering, like, you know, has anyone ever made a remark about you being in an interracial relationship in terms of, like, you know, who you, like, do you find people of other, you know, like, let's take your white boyfriend, for example. Has anyone ever accused you of, you know, thinking that white people are more attractive than black people or made other some other remark?
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. And I kind of look at, because I think there are just a lot of things that I guess I'm a little bit comfortable in certain ways, and I've always just kind of thrown it back at them, like, why are we having this conversation? to kind of tease it out, right? Because it's like you're asking me to explain something to you out of something either you don't understand or you don't like.
Right.
And so for me, I look at a lot of things of, like, so what is the root of this conversation, and what is it that you want out of it, right? Like, is there something that you genuinely, honestly want to know because either you've never done it or you have some questions? Or, like, what do you want? Like, why? Because I think I want to know, like, where my directions need to go, right? Because that can also, for me, also have different, elicit different responses. Like, I do have a person who has kind of been in and out of, like, my friend circle, like, in close friend circles, who brings it up at several parties and certain things. And most recently, I would say, like, the last 6 months, we've had a couple of gatherings. And he brings it up, and I've now seen him, and I kind of look at him, and I'm like, well, why are we even talking about this? Because if you didn't like people, and he's a black male, and I'm like, if you don't like folks who are in these interracial relationships, where you're certainly around a lot of folks that are, and you can make a choice to not be around them. So I get it that it's a joke of yours, but, like, why? Like, why? Like, I laugh, and I'm like, and he looks at me, and that's just my response, because I'm like, it's not even funny at this point. It's just like you're actually just being rude, you know. And I have gotten it often from some folks who said, like, you know, is that all you date? Is that only who you date? And I'm like, so now I have to explain my dating history to you because at this present time, the person on my arm is white. And you have now just prejudged my entire history and my entire life.
That's actually kind of interesting because I've heard very similar things come from, and obviously this is vastly different when we're talking about sex, gender, and then race. But I've heard very similar things from some of my bisexual friends when they will be, you know, if they are a man that is dating a man, but they also date women, but they just happen to be in a monogamous relationship with a man, that's just automatically the assumption that, oh, you're gay now. And it's like, no. So it's like, so you're saying that very similarly, people are looking at you in the last couple of, you know, dating, you know, relationships that you had and basically said, oh, so you only date white people.
Exactly.
So do you find that happens even more or less? Like, does it happen more or less within the LGBTQ community or outside of it, or is it kind of the same?
I think it happens in its own spaces, and it's been very unique, right? And so I'm someone that's lived, like, in different parts of the country. So I'm from the East Coast, have lived in the Northeast, lived out West, and watch how a lot of these spaces have, like, even taken shape and form. Like, for example, like, when I was in San Francisco, it was very common, you know, for interracial relationships between, you know, white males and Asian men, right? But then when I was on the East Coast, it was very, like, white men, black men, and that's also just populations, right? You know, like, who's wearing who's what.
Right.
And for me, I think the conversation really just stems into what I call, like, just historical states of oppression, right? So, like, where historically and why historically have we had this space, right? You know, because even when we're talking about, like, bisexual folks, you know, what is that rooted in? Oh, wow, like, they like everyone. They're going to take everyone. They're going to cheat on me. So that's this historical myth, right, that they're going to cheat on me. They're never going to love me. They're going to love everyone, and I have no chance with someone who's that bisexual, right? If I meet this guy who maybe has dated, you know, and if you, like, that's what we're saying, like, preference and language is important, right? And we're saying, like, if he's dated, like, primarily white men and he's a black man, now he's not going to know how to treat me as a black man, or I'm going to be, like, a savior or a test, right? there is so many different layers to it. So, like, I always sit back and look at it, like, where is this historically rooted, and why is this historically rooted in someone? Here in Chicago, I've seen a lot of different types of, like, you know, mixed-race relationships, and I just analyze it to the point of, like, just the population. I don't want to call no judgments on anyone. I don't want to say anything. I'm like, there's just different pockets of community here. Chicago has a different layout. Chicago has a different kind of, like, degrees of separation of folks. And there's historical oppression among folks and historical divides that have been here before I, you know, got, you know, arrived to Chicago. So there are things that I'm fighting, you know, in terms, like I said, this historical systems of oppression that I'm like, I didn't even contribute to this. I'm just showed up. I do a good job. I work at a university, and I like who I like, you know, and it just happens to be this is the one that I'm dating at the moment, you know.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you. Eli, do we have time for one more question for Derek?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Derek, I was wondering, because you've talked about other people's comments, what do you think is the most challenging aspect of being in an interracial relationship, particularly with someone who's white as a black man?
I mean, I could even put my finger on it on several things. I think ultimately it really does come down to the person, right? And the reason why I say it comes down to the person and some of those specifics and how we do relate is because I'm someone that when I look at these historical spaces, right, I think it goes back to just overall, like, landscape of how we are taught to love, how we are told we should love, and how we are told we should be, and how we are told we should go and just grow. And it's just unfortunate, right? And so people can't believe the levels of intimacy that some folks have, you know, and the appreciation that some people have. I know this is, like, a very, like, vague answer, because I can't tell you, like, there were some times with, like, one of my partners where I don't think he got an understanding of how big race affected me. But by the time we were done, it was like, wow, I get it. Then I have dated others who I think were more advocates about race issues than I'd ever felt before, and it was an uncomfortable thing for me, right? And so I really do think that one of the hardest parts is, like what we're talking about tonight, is just the overall assumption by others. Because I'm not able to love wholly, and I'm not able to be whole, because before we can even be people, you know, we have to be in these separate dichotomies that show up as race. Because, you know, as we hold on to these identities give us power and privilege, right? And so when we start to step out of those privileged spaces, we're now losing something. And so it's like it has been like a different level of watching certain folks that I've dated, because there have been some who I know who we are in, like, this very, like, just mixed people, if you will, like, kind of spaces. And we are having critical conversations around gender. We're having conversations around race. We're having conversations around sexual orientation and class. We're having conversations around academic level and what does that mean in ability and access, right? And it's this beautiful nature wherein we're not able to be seen that. And so as we walk down the street, all we're seeing is this black and white male identified person walking down the street. And it's just unfortunate because, you know, like, there's so much more work to be done, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And so I'm always about the freedom of love. And why can't you just be happy that we are in love? You know, because as I look at the relationships, we start out even with, like, the bisexual comment, and which I really appreciated, it was like, you haven't even given value to my relationship. Like, you haven't even said that it actually meant something, you know, the other example, like, of gay marriage and how it's like, you know, two men can't marry and two women can't curse, you know, all these things. It's like, you haven't even given value to me as a person. So the moment that I walk into a room, I could have been with whomever it is for years. We could have houses, cars, all the monetary wealth. We could be, you know, contributors, kids, all these things of what we do with the world, contributors and good people. But I would say the hardest part is, as soon as I walk into that room, I get labeled 15 times. We get looked at 15 times, you know, the type of service that happens. And it's unfortunate because there's nothing to do with who we are as people and who we are. All about how others are treating us. in the systems that they have done. And it's unfortunate that we have to be in these political spaces just by being who we are and being in love. I'm not even free of love. My love is a political movement.
Yeah, and I think that that's an amazing point, and I think that that's one of the things that we will be talking about with the rest of our guests tonight. Derek, I could talk to you all night long. I want to thank you for joining us. Just the things that you said are amazing. They're kicking us off on a great note. But before we go to commercial, I just want to really thank you for taking the time to join us and to share some of your story.
All right. Thank you. Anytime.
Bye, Derek.
Well, we've got some great guests tonight that are going to even follow up with what Derek has said. We've got a couple that will be coming on after the break, as well as another individual. But before we move on to introduce those guests, we are going to take a short commercial break.
The Strong Stance Tonight podcast is happily sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of the spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including wherever you're listening to The Strong Stance on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audible.com/back2us, you get one free audiobook and 1 month of trial of the service. And, you know, guys, if you've been listening to The Strong Stance and all of the shows on Back to Us Radio Network, we can't do this without our sponsors. And because of all of the overwhelming support that you all have given us this past year, we have outgrown our airtime package. So the only way that we can get to the next level is with sponsorship. So we really need your help. Please use the URL. Again, it's audibletrial.com/back2us. Sign up for that trial, and Audible will help pay our airtime for every person that signs up for the trial. They will help pay for the airtime so that we can stay on air. We don't want to go away. We want to stay here, but we need your help. All right, Eli. I'm turning it back over to you.
Thank you so much. So, first of all, before we even move on, Melvin, that was amazing. I love when you find amazing guests and just kind of bring them into my world. So, another thank you to Derek Gunter for joining us, and obviously, Melvin, thank you. And I know that you've brought us another guest that we will get to a little later. But for right now, our next guest is actually a couple that I'm friends with here in D.C., and that's Tiffany Mott Smith and Lee Winicki. Tiffany and Lee have been together for a year and a half. Tiffany is a self-identified black femme nerd and Jackie of all trades. In her 5 to 9, she is a sex worker advocate, chanteuse, and striptease historian with a focus in queer burlesque and barrel house blues. Lee is a young trans person who has facilitated several groups locally with the D.C. Center, the Washington Peace Center, and Washington Empowered Against Violence. He is also a freelance contributor for Washington City Paper and Tag Magazine, covering gender, sexuality, and radical social justice movements. And they happen to be one of my favorite couples in the D.C. queer community. So I just want to welcome Tiffany and Lee. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing super
very,
well.
Very, well. Well, listen, you know, I've known you guys for a while. You are one of those amazing couples that I always just kind of love to watch interact. And the way that, you know, it's one of those things where you guys are a couple that makes me wish that this radio show was actually a TV show, because I know that even though wherever you're calling in from, I'm sure that Tiffany has the perfect outfit on right now.
Yeah.
And the perfect shade of lipstick. And Lee is probably rocking something amazing as well. So thank you both for taking the time out to talk to us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
We're so excited.
So, you know, we were talking to Derek just before about, you know, his experiences in an interracial relationship. And, you know, not only are you both, you know, in an interracial relationship with each other, but one of you is trans-identified, and one of you, if I'm not speaking out of turn, Tiffany, do you identify as cis?
I do identify as a cis black woman. So, you know, happy Juneteenth, y'all. just wanted to put that out there.
So I think that it's interesting because you kind of, your relationship kind of encompasses both of the topics that we're talking about, whether it's both, you know, interracial or trans cis. And so, I mean, I'd love to talk to you both about how you kind of feel about, has being in an interracial relationship affected, you know, the way that you interact with each other, but particularly when it comes to interacting with the world around you here in D.C.?
That's a big question. I feel like that's a
huge question.
Every aspect of our life together.
Everything. Just, it's unbelievable sometimes. Wait, I'm going to make you go first, Lee.
Okay. All right, I'll go first.
Because it's Juneteenth. It's my day.
I definitely think that affects, like, all our lives very much. Like, D.C., I mean, just like everywhere, there's a lot of racial tension, and there's a lot of racism that happens here. And I don't know. I mean, I think for me, like, what, like, one moment that I keep coming back to that summarizes, like, our experience together is just, like, a moment we were at the table with someone who was, like, white and masculine-identified lesbian woman. And Tiffany and her were talking about something, and Tiffany is much smarter than me, so I was completely lost, and I had no
Rude.
Idea what was happening. And they kept, like, rolling their eyes at her and, like, kind of brushing her off, and then, like, looking to me, like, waiting for me to say something intelligent, and I just, like, was sitting there, like, I have no idea what's happening. But, like, in that moment, like, my masculinity and my whiteness, like, made them view me as someone that was their equal. But Tiffany, like, you know, being femme and black, like, it just, like, creates this mixture of, like, prejudice that, like, racism and misogyny that, like, was just, like, I mean, it's kind of shitty to see your partner, like, being treated not well. And, like, for me, a big part of that has been, like, learning how to support her and stand up for her and when, like, I should step in or when I should let her, you know, take care of things. And that's something we constantly are working on.
For sure.
So,
and I think that it's interesting that you brought up us working on it, because it is there. I can never really tell when I'm going to be like, wait, fix it, or when I'm going to be like, I got this. Like, I can't possibly know where I'm going to be at that day. And I think it took a while for me to understand what was happening and how out of my control it was. I think that, well, I was raised by very, very strong, mostly black women. Most of my family is woman identified. And so it was always this constant walking the line between, like, figuring out when I needed help and when I needed to ask someone to step in, and also when I needed to just, you know, kind of put my big girl panties on and do it myself. But then on the other side of that, the older I get, the more I'm like, oh, well, it doesn't really matter how you respond. Oftentimes it's really just out of your control. And so you do
right.
have to figure out how you're going to feel about what's happening to you, but you can't really control what's happening.
So do you feel like, you know, and from a, you guys have a slightly different experience because, you know, and I'm not sure of who all you hang out with outside of when I see you, but generally when I see the two of you, you're generally surrounded by either trans-identified people or around lesbians. And so as opposed to our first guest who sounded like most of the friends that he was talking about were male, do you feel like that there is any kind of difference, whether it's from the lesbian community or the trans community, with regard to the status of your relationship, is it better or worse around them? Are they more or less understanding than, say, society at large? And how, if at all, does the fact that Lee identifies as trans play into that?
Lee, will you go first again, please, dear?
Yeah.
Let me mean it.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's, living in D.C. have really only been in queer community. I haven't spent a lot of time in, like, straight spaces. I feel pretty uncomfortable in them, honestly. But, I mean, I will say that, like, because of we have so many things going on, finding a space that is comfortable for us is hard because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just imagine if, like, there were less forms of oppression we were trying to avoid, like, it might be a little easier to find a space that was comfortable for both of us.
Right.
Like, finding a space that's, like, trans-friendly, but not only trans-friendly, like, friendly to a trans person like me, who's, like, non-binary and, like, a really feminine boy. Like, and then also finding a space that's, like, going to be, like, mixed racially and okay with us mixing and okay with, like, and not be mean, like, or racist or whatever. Like, it's, that is a big challenge. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think I can necessarily speak for, like, this community compared to other communities personally, but I think that our, like, intersections make it hard to find a community or, like, spaces that are safe for both of us.
Yeah, and it is really about knowing who you are at that moment, I think. Because, I mean, honestly, like, I have 100 jobs because I am from Detroit and that's just how I roll. And so, you know, there's moments where, like, I, you know, in my 9-to-5, I'm at the Smithsonian all day, so I enjoy, like, my nerdy conversations there. But then, you know, I'm a burlesque dancer. Like, I love it. So sometimes I want to be in that fun, raunchy space, too. But within that, that's the thing about being at an intersection of lots of things, is that you can kind of see down all these different roads. But the other thing about being at the intersection is that unless you are able to split yourself into pieces, you can't go down every road at the same time. You have to kind of pick
one. Right.
And that's been my observation, is that I often have to pick. I have to pick, like, am I, you know, a lesbian? Am I a black woman? Am I, like, you know, liberal? Am I conservative? Am I, like, it's a lot of picking and choosing. Am I, you know, poor today? Am I rich today? Like, I don't know, like, what, because it is really, there's all these parts of yourself that you kind of have to, like, break apart. Are you queer? Are you this? Are you that? And I will never forget this. I remember it was right after everything happened with Trayvon Martin, and I had a course where they wanted us to go to this particular event, and it was a queer event, and I declined because I needed to go be at a rally for Trayvon. And I remember saying out loud, I was like, I feel like I'm being asked to choose between my queer kid or my black kid, because in that moment it was just like, and it was, it felt very much like all my black friends were like, excuse me, where's your hoodie? And then all my queers were like, so we have a thing for you. I don't know if you know if you're gay or not today, but this is where we're going. So, like, it is like that. It's, you know, it's that intersection. You gotta pick which way you're going to turn.
So, I mean, I have, one more question, because I have a feeling there's going to be another one of those big questions. And so I have to keep you on the air all night asking just a series of big questions, but I will limit myself to one more. Something that Melvin had brought up in some questions that we were both kind of, you know, brainstorming was that about it being a political act. So, yes, I understand it's a big question, but do you see your relationship as kind of you being with each other in any way? Do you kind of see that as a political act, or is it just you kind of fell into it being political, but you didn't mean for it to be, like, how do you kind of view the context of your relationship within the realm of politics of race and gender and everything else that we have to throw into that?
Well, a political act, my goodness. heavens to Betsy Cakes. Yeah, so I will say that I did not realize that a political act, because I've dated outside of my race, like, pretty frequently, and so I didn't really realize what it was. But the older I get, the more it seems people want to hold you accountable for things, and that happens to be one of them, dating interracially. But also, like, I think there's some camps that have sprung up around me where it's a lot of black women that are like, nope, I'm dating white people and this is where I'm at and here we go. And then there's some other camps that are like, absolutely, there is no way in hell that I would date a white person. And I see various reasons why on both sides. But what happened is, I remember having a moment where I felt very frustrated with Lee, and I felt like I was like, not Lee per se, but the people that were around Lee. I was watching how they responded to him and how they responded to me, and they were very different. And I knew it to be because, you know, I'm very dark-skinned, natural-haired black woman, and it upset me. It really upset me, and I got to this moment, and I went to, like, you know, my femme group of color, and I was like, I just am mad, and this is the worst. And one of them, I'll never forget this, she literally was like, well, are you in love with him yet? Because if you are, maybe you can just break up with him. Like, I mean, like, literally, they were just like,
wow.
We don't know what to tell you. If you can get out now, maybe we can. And I was like, that's the only answer, is just to walk away. But at the same time, on the other hand, I watch, I feel personally that it's more of a political statement that I am dating a trans person as a lesbian-identified woman. I mean, honestly, like, I consider myself to be, like, more gay than a picnic basket for a row at the little fair. Like, I'm gay. And so, like, I really, you know what I mean? Like, doing Michelle Indigotello's set, like, that's how fucking gay I am. And so, I just, like, it's these moments where, like, I realize how much people are like, well, you can't be, you can't be, you can't be, you can't be, because you're dating a trans person, you're dating a trans person. It really holds me accountable for that. But more than that, I've become the authority on every trans issue for, like, every cis person. And I'm like, I hope that you know that I do not know nothing. I don't know anything. And so if you're coming to me for answers, oh, boo, we're in trouble. So I think that I'm finding is a huge political statement, especially, like, you know, in academia, the more degrees I stack / more debt I collect with said degrees, the more people right. are asking me, especially, you know, my PhD is in public health, and my track is LGBT health policy in particular. And I'm surrounded by people who, like, know of trans people, but don't necessarily have any personal relationships with any trans person. And and I'm finding myself to be really much, very much alone in that. And
right.
unfortunately, like, it just happens where people are like, so riddle me this, Tiffany. And I'm like, honestly, I did not realize that. I didn't realize that would happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people kind of, you know, go through, whether it's somebody asking inappropriate questions or asking questions that aren't even about you but about your partner. So I do want to ask Lee, you know, briefly, because we have yet another guest that we need to bring on. But Lee, is there anything that you want to say about, you know, your relationship being, you know, is it a political act to you, particularly being someone of privilege when it comes to race but not necessarily gender identity?
I wouldn't say that me being with Tiffany is a political act. I mean, I really like being with her, so that's kind of a selfish act. But I would say, like, within a relationship, like, that's when, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, that's when I think we have all of these moments where political things are happening, where, like, people are pushing back or something's happening, and we need to deal with it, and we need to decide, like, are we going to fight right now? Are we just going to let it slide? Are we going to, like, you know, and as more time goes on and we spend more time together, like, I'm much more aware of, like, when people are being racist to her, or, like, when someone is treating her differently than I was when we first met. And, like, so I think, like, not necessarily a political act, but there's politics. Like, we can't get the politics out of our relationship, so, like, we need to figure out, like, how to deal with it when it comes up. And when, yeah, and, like, when to push back and when to not.
Well, I have asked you a series of huge questions, and I appreciate your utmost honesty in them. You know, I think that one of the things that I keep finding with the show is we bring on these guests that I could probably talk to for hours. And so I just want to thank you both for taking the time to share experiences about your relationship, to kind of give us a little, you know, insight into, you know, the DC scene and kind of how you see your place in it with regard to who you love and who you're dating, particularly in this moment. And you're both fabulous, and I just want to thank you again for joining us.
All right. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much.
So, Melvin, we have yet another guest that is going to, I'm sure, make me want to just wish that this show was 2 hours long. So
yeah,
let's go ahead and waste your time in introducing him. Would you like to introduce Sean?
I would love to introduce Sean. Sean is a self-identified black, queer, and agender slash, I'm sorry, I messed that up. Sean Michael Wade is a black, queer, and agender slash genderqueer femboy. He is a writer and award-winning activist based in Washington, D.C. His writing, which has been published on the Huffington Post and in PAWS magazine, explores the colonization of African and indigenous American queerness and the intersection of black, queer, and transgender. Please welcome Sean Wade. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
How's it going? Sean, I want to thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Thank you for having me. These conversations have been awesome thus far.
Yeah, I know, right? So I wanted to bring you on, Sean, because, you know, I think that, you know, your comment started is going to be a little different from what we've heard so far on the show. I know people often talk about, you know, in terms of race and dating, you know, when white people say they have a preference for other white people, you know, it's often based on racism. But when people of color talk about a preference to date other people of color, right, it's necessarily about the same thing. It's not based in racism, right? So I wanted to bring you on because you're someone who's spoken to me about your conscious decision to not date people who are white. I was wondering if you could talk to me about if that's the case.
There's a lot in that. So as I get into the dating world, Melvin, you are correct. I'm not really interested in dating anyone who is not a person of color. And because I identify as queer and being open to all different sorts of people, sometimes my attractions lie with someone who identifies as a man and as masculine, and as someone who is black and femme, I am consciously thinking about what does that mean if I'm attracted to someone who is masculine, a man, and white, and then I'm on the complete other end of the spectrum, whereas there, you know, at the top of the so-called appropriated totem pole, you know, you have your black and brown femme people who are kind of at the bottom of that, and what does that power dynamic do in relationships? And for me, that's just something that I don't want to deal with in an intimate relationship. I barely want to deal with it in friendships, honestly, because I already have all of these other isms and phobias with transphobia and affirmophobia and all these other things. I just, maybe it's just like a personal internalized thing. I think there's also the fact that I don't typically find Eurocentric standards of beauty to be attractive. Of course, bearing in mind that all white people don't look alike. So, of course, there are a few people here and there who are like, oh, that's a cute white person, that's a cute white person. But as you all discussed earlier, you know, the personal is political. And so when I think about the access that white people have to privilege and their frequent cultural abuse of that privilege, I'm immediately turned off. And then due to the history of oppression, exploitation, and dehumanization of black bodies at the hands of white people, gender or sexuality aside, that is a very enraging thing for me. And I think about how, as a culture, they struggle with entitlement issues, especially in relation to black and brown bodies. And I find that's something that I don't know if I can't get over it or if I refuse to get over it. I'm not sure which one it is.
So I want to ask you, so in terms of gender identity, I mean, do you feel that same hierarchy is at play when we're talking about cisgender people and trans people dating each other, or, you know, a preference for what we were talking about earlier regarding preference and gender identity? Do you think that comes into play with that same sort of hierarchy?
Where cis people dating trans people?
Yeah. I'm sorry, trans people dating cisgender people.
Gotcha.
Yes, I guess it's the same thing. Yeah.
So this is something I've actually been thinking about lately. Maybe even when you and I originally had these sorts of conversations, and I noted just a few seconds ago about the power dynamic of interracial dating when it comes to a black femme dating someone who, for example, is a white masculine person. But the thing that I think a lot of people aren't discussing is that, at least in the United States, and I was born and raised in the United States, so this is my culture, cis sexism and transphobia and our gender binary is extremely white supremacist. People aren't really talking about how in African, I will call them nations for now, but in African nations pre-colonization, in the indigenous American lands pre-colonization, there are these ideas and concepts of gender and sexuality where it wasn't this heteronormative, cisnormative binary. And so I feel like when it comes to dating a cis person who is a person of color, I can, once you lay that out like that, this gender binary is in fact a racist binary at its root,
right,
then it's easier to kind of overcome the obstacle of cis sexism and transphobia. Whereas if I were to date a white person and I tried to break down this binary system as racist, you know, they may be anti-racism, anti-oppression, but it's not going to click the same way because they haven't felt that level of oppression. It doesn't click the same for them. I do definitely think that outside of myself, there is a hierarchy with that. I've seen it in the recent marriage of a friend who married a cisgender woman, where there's a lot of debate about that and their relationship. And while I was listening to Derek, I was kind of taking in how it seemed like he got a lot of backlash from people about being open to dating white people. And that's one thing I try not to do, because your relationship is your own thing, so it's each their own. But for me, I'm not going to date a white person, and I might date a cis person, whereas other people will say, I'll date a white person, but I won't date a cis person.
Wow. Yeah, that's very interesting. I think that, you know, when people make those kinds of comments, there's a lot of assumptions behind that. There's not this live and let live mentality. Yes, we can critique it, you know, however we feel about it, but, you know, I very much strongly am against people telling others, you know, who they should be dating and making assumptions about them. So with that, all of that being said, would you ever consider dating a cisgender person who, I'm sorry, would you ever consider dating a transgender person who was white? Like, given what we've talked about with regards to the power dynamics, and you talked about how you could date a cisgender person of color because, I guess I'll just ask the question, would you consider dating a trans person who was white?
That I think I mentioned that that's something I've been thinking about. I don't know. I still lean on the side of no. And I think it's just because before I'm anything else, I'm black. That is the first thing that people see about me. That is the one thing about myself that I cannot hide. I may be from presenting, but I can very easily put bass in my voice and put on baggy pants to pass as butch. But people will always see that I'm black. And so for me, my blackness isn't happenstance. It's like, oh, I happen to be black today. Like, it's a very conscious decision to invest myself in black culture and black identity. And so not dating white people, whether they're trans or cis, is almost like an act of resistance and solidarity with people of color. I can't say that if I made the decision to date someone who is white and trans, it would, like, my stances would change because they know, like, another side of my oppression at all. Just right. Because, again, the trans experience, the trans narrative, the gender binary is such a white supremacist thing that sometimes I even question, is there, I don't want to say a level of oppression because there certainly is, but is there this hardcore level when you have these two totally different communities battling completely different gender binaries. And so I don't even see myself being open to really dating a white trans person because I see how they treat black trans people.
Mm-hmm. What have you seen in the community?
About how white trans people date black trans or treat
yeah.
black trans people?
Yeah.
I think that the Philadelphia Trans Health Conference that we just had this past weekend is a perfect example where you had massive groups of transgender white people imposing themselves and literally invading spaces that people of color created for themselves. And when workshops were labeled as, you know, restricted people of color only, you still had white people coming in and say, oh, we belong here, we deserve to be here. And so if I can't even get my own space in this way, I don't necessarily know if I trust a partner to give me that space when the entire community seems to have this entitlement issue.
Mm. Oh, you said a lot. So, Eli, do you have any follow-up questions for Sean?
I got to be honest with you. I mean, every time I thought about a question to ask, he was answering it as I thought about it. That actually very much upsets me to hear that about Philly. And I, of course, wasn't there. I wasn't able to go. But I think that there is a vast difference between showing up to show support and invading a space that is clearly marked as for people of color only, or by the flip of the coin, for women only, or whatever the case may be. And it always upsets me when there is an abuse of power like that, because of the fact that there are so many people, as you were saying, that may be trying to do anti-racist work, but if they've never understood what it's like to be on that side of the coin, then are they really someone that you can truly relate to in an intimate relationship? So I don't have any follow-up questions. What I do have is a massive thank you for coming on and being so honest about not only your personal beliefs around that, and being very forthright in, you know, this is the way I live my life and this is why I live my life, and, you know, not worrying about what someone else might think, because I feel like that's what gets in the way of us having these conversations, is that you kind of have to be out there and say what you need to say in order to get your point across. Otherwise, things just continue, and you can, you know, a person would continue to apologize for feelings that they are very much entitled to have. So I want to thank you for taking the time to come on and share this with us.
Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. I want to thank you two for actually creating this space for these kinds of conversations to take place as well.
Oh, thank you.
That's what we do. That is what we do. Well, thank you so much, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience with us. I want to thank all of our guests for tonight. And, of course, Melvin, I have to thank you above all else. Once again, you have been a stellar co-host, and you've brought this amazing dialogue to the Strong Stance, and brought some amazing guests. And so I want to thank you again, and I said it last time and I'll say it again this time, but I hope we can do it again.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much, Eli. This has been awesome. I love doing this.
Well, to all of our listeners, I want to thank you for taking the time out to once again join us on the Strong Stance. And, of course, before we go, as you heard earlier today earlier in our show during the commercial break, today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/back2us. That's audibletrial.com/back2us. I want to thank you all again and again and again for continuing the outpouring of support that you have, not only for the Strong Stance, but all of our programming on Back to Us Network. I look forward to seeing you again next month on The Strong Stance. Everyone out there, have a wonderful night.
Yeah.